The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to
tell you what you know. Brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Absolutely the very best when it comes to smart home technology, in-home automation, surround sound, in-home theaters. How about having rocket-fast Wi-Fi anywhere in your house, all over the house, outside your house? Speakers outside, they do that. TVs outside. Listen, they are the best in the business. Check them out at applausetheater.com. That's applausetheater.com. First time I worked with Applause, 2004. It's an industry that most companies don't even last 2 years. They're knocking on the door of 20 years in business. See them online at applausetheater.com. All right, let's hear some Chiefs sound. What has been going on with your Kansas City Chiefs today? Andy Reid, Chris Jones, Anthony Hitchens available to talk today. Let's start with Andy Reid talking about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, what he needs to see. He was asked, what do you want? What do you want him doing to allow him to play this Sunday?
Yeah, well, listen, a couple of days ago, he moved around real well. And then we've just kind of backed off him. He's still doing stuff, just not with the group. So, we'll just see how he does here, and take it. We're literally taking it day by day. So we'll see how it rolls.
He's out.
Yes, I think
he's out.
So.
He just got hit with the dreaded day. Literally, It's not just day by day. It's when you're literally day by day, you now go into the Eric Berry category, which means we may not see him for, what, 6-8 months?
I'll say, if you don't know, on Friday, it seems like unlikely. On Sunday, I don't remember the last time I heard a coach refer to a guy's day by day that he played on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think Andy Reid's kind of MO is you practice a week, and then you're ready to go. And so I don't think he's going to play. I think this is just a little bit of making the opposition prep for him. I expect Le'Veon Bell to be the guy to get the ball, but who knows? Who knows? I've been wrong before, right?
Once.
Curtis likes to point it out every single time.
That one time.
Oh, you're kind.
That one time, 2002. I remember it well.
One time during that commercial break is is more reality. No Sammy Watkins either. That is part of the equation for the Kansas City Chiefs that they are dealing with getting ready for this game. In fact, Willie Gay and Sammy Watkins out for the game for the Browns. So Willie Gay already ruled out. Rashad Fenton, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Deion Yelder have been officially listed as questionable at this time. So no Sammy Watkins for Andy Reid. He was asked how comfortable he is that someone is going to step up in Watkins' absence.
We all love Sammy, so he's done a heck of a job here. But like with any situation like this, we just next guy up and we go. And I'm not sure anybody blinks on that. You giddy up and go. And that's not because Sam's not a great player. That's not it. It's just one of those things, how this team's wired, and we do the best we possibly can. And from a coaching standpoint on down with the players, just do the best you can, and here we go. So that's what we're doing.
By the way, I mean, there it is, an example of coaches, how they got a lie. Because I can 100% absolutely tell you 31 other teams in the NFL will vehemently confirm that Sammy Watkins is not a, quote, great player.
Yeah.
But you gotta massage egos.
Sam.
Right?
Sam, as he called him.
No team that isn't currently employing a guy, right? Mm-hmm. Where you start kidding yourself and trying to make yourself believe that guys are more. It's, you know, the old adage, I think it was Dayton Moore who told us this, or maybe no, it wasn't. But like, you know, when you look at your minor leagues, you look down there, you see 20 prospects, 20 guys that you think are going to be a part of your club, a core part of your club. Another team looks at your club and goes, "Nah, they got 2 guys."
Mm-hmm.
Right? You always love your guys more. So part of that's just them loving their guys more. But, you know, we don't need to beat up on Sammy Watkins. We would beat up on Sammy Watkins had they lost to the Texans, right? Think about how nobody got more out of winning a championship than Sammy Watkins, because otherwise that contract would be crushed. He hasn't come close to living up to the $48 million, but he did play big en route to winning a Super Bowl. So nobody cares that he's overpaid.
Yeah, he has that. He has the one play that set up the go-ahead touchdown. And so they're going to run that film forever, and Sammy Watkins is going to beat Richard Sherman every time, and he's going to be golden from this point on regardless.
Yeah, I listen, he's a good player when he's on the field, but he's not on the field enough to even be considered, in my opinion, a good player.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
If you want to say it's semantics, well, when he plays, he's good. Yes, he is. But he doesn't play enough, right? So however you want to try to quantify it. But, listen, the Chiefs can move forward and then get him back. They get even better. They're definitely – I like them better with him active and ready to go than without him. But this team, I think one thing you could say is over the 3 years he's been here, they've learned to play without him.
Or as Andy Reid says, they're going to giddy up and go.
Going to giddy up and go. Anthony Hitchens is going to go in this game, and he's going to go up against Kareem Hunt. I asked Hitchens what goes into preparing for a runner that Eric Bieniemy called violent, right? That's his style. He's a violent runner that he's going to attack. You have to be careful, guard against maybe being too amped up, right? Trying to deliver too much of a blow. What goes into prepping for the style that Kareem Hunt brings?
Yeah, he's one of the better backs we played in this league, and not just him. They keep him fresh with rotating both of them, and really good backs and really good O-line. They did a good job putting that team together, and we're going to have our hands full like every week. I mean, there's great players all over this league, and he's just a perfect example of one. But, he's a violent runner, and we got some violent defensive players as well. So should be a good task for us. We're not trying to overdo it. We've been here before. We played teams like this before. So we'll be ready and, just let the best team win.
We'll be ready. Confidence there, right?
We'll be ready. We got some violent guys, too.
Yeah, we got some violent guys, too. He is a tough physical runner. I think the key in stopping Kareem Hunt is getting defensive linemen into the backfield. Don't let him get ahead of steam going. He runs so low. He does a great job of running behind his pads, which means it's part of getting low, but also delivering a blow and exploding into the opponent. He's not afraid of contact. I want no part of tackling Kareem Hunt. I want no part of tackling many people at this point, but that is a guy that when I see guys have to try to bring him down, I'm like, that sucks.
He doesn't just use that physicality. Most guys, if they use that part of their game, it's to bowl guys over. He kind of uses that going around guys and over the top of guys as well. It's kind of a combination. Some guys go around and over. He seems to do it even that in a violent way.
Well, and he's one of those guys that, has all the tools. He's not just a power guy, to your point, just to expand upon your point. Because he's so powerful and runs so physical and will hurt you with the way he runs, you gear up to try to deliver a blow, right? Like, if you don't want to get hurt, then you have to deliver a blow. Blow against blow, you'll stand each other up and each guy will walk away from it. One guy delivers a blow, the other guy just kind of cowers, and that guy gets his ass kicked. And so you have to try to deliver a blow back, and then he cuts.
Yeah. And his balance.
You're delivering a blow, and he's made a move. He's shifty enough. Christian Okoye would deliver a blow, but there was no shiftiness.
No.
Right? He delivers a blow and is shifty, which is what makes him so difficult to deal with. Because of that, their ability to run, and you heard Anthony Hitchens bring Nick Chubb into the equation as well, two really good backs that are involved for the Cleveland Browns. Play action becomes a big part of what they do. There are some teams like the Bucs don't play action. They don't run great, but like you should still play action. The Chiefs play action. I don't know why you wouldn't show the run and try to freeze the defenders a little bit. Cleveland does it great. Baker Mayfield's a pretty good ball faker in what he does back there. And, of course, the threat of the run makes you be honest. I asked Anthony Hitchens, basically, I said, look, I'm not asking for specifics or to give away the game plan, but talking about, like, tells. Like, yeah, I've always wondered, when they go back there to hand off, do you know, are you already like, okay, he's still got two more steps before he gets to the back, but I know the back's not getting it. Is there something from formation? Is there something from, the biggest, easiest one is like the running back doesn't put his mouthpiece in when he's not getting the ball, right? That was like the cheesy junior high crap. It goes, oh, there's some guys that do that and impossibly incompetent things that it's just that easy. You know, if it's a run, the wideout doesn't have his mouthpiece in, you know, whatever. Those kind of little things. Is there some kind of tell, right, that comes with it on the play action? Is there a way to cheat basically the scheme? I asked him as he figured out, you know, regularly, just in general, because I know they're not going to talk to, yeah, Kareem Hunt does this, or yeah, Mayfield does this, just about the tells and whether or not, you know, it's going to be play action, run or pass.
Yeah, most teams, you can. Cleveland does a good job of marrying their stretch run with their boots and their play action, and they have the athletic linemen to do it. And it looks like run and then it's boot. So it's not really a tell. It's kind of the feel of the game, you know, the situation, second and long versus, you know, first and 10. So it's just all that stuff plays a role in how you play. You know, you get the call, you see the down on distance, and then you see a formation and you go from there. So different parts of the game, you know, they might trick you once or twice, but once you get the flow of the game and the situation, the down and distance and things like that, you're able to, you know, be one up on the offense, you know? So, yeah, I just think as the game goes on, we just catch the flow. But the main priority is stopping the run. So we can react to the boot. That's just off your ability and your reaction. We play the run and react to the boot. So that's our motto going in.
Play the run and react to the boot. That's something to watch. Yep. Clearly, this is a run team. So they're going to be flying up, and then they're going to react and play the boot. Tight end leaking out the backside, right? Three wideouts to the power side, show the run, and then the one solo wideout, Jarvis Landry on the backside, getting the ball. Quarterback bootlegs, right? The defensive ends have to stay home, freeze you on the backside. Is the quarterback going to boot out the back way? We used to watch Mike Shanahan and the Broncos kill the Chiefs with the naked boot out the backside. Those are all things that are there. It's designed to, one, help the power run, to leave the backside defensive end home to where he's not chasing that play down, because if he crashes down hard, Baker Mayfield escapes and he's off for an easy 5-plus yard gain. All the little nuances of the game within the game. But I did, the one thing he said time and time and time and time again in there is down and distance. It wasn't so much reading body language or a formation, down and distance. Third and 11, that play action's a fake. He's going to throw the ball. We're ready to drop, right? But a lot of second and twos, second and threes. Chiefs need to win on first down because the down and distance, second and nines are throwing down, right? You know what's coming. If you're looking at second and two all the time, they've got both at their disposal, and it gets a lot harder to try to defend that. Chris Jones next up at the podium, talking about the regular season. Todd Lebo asking Chris Jones about what the regular season has been like, waiting for what ultimately is going to judge their season, what ultimately is going to be the determining factor whether this is a good or bad season, sitting around waiting on the playoffs.
Todd, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Todd, you know, I've been enjoying the process. You know, it came a point in the last year that we didn't know if we was going to be able to finish the season. And, you know, the league was able to come up with some restrictions to limit this thing, and we was fortunate enough to finish the season and enjoy the process along the way. You know, there's a lot of things go into even making a playoff, building a playoff team and actually winning a bye. You know, with the new CBA, you only get one team with a bye, and being able to establish ourselves within the playoff talk and winning enough games to secure the number one spot in the bye. And then you kind of transition your focus to the playoff and what team are you playing and prepare for that. But I've been enjoying the process. You know, you got to enjoy the process in order to get to where you want to go. And for me, I've been focused on the process, focused on week in and week out, getting better and getting the people around me better, most importantly.
I love that answer.
Also, the way he says bye.
Bye.
This is how everything else
he said. A lot of processes in there.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have time, but I followed up. Lebo was thinking the same way I was. I had the next question, and I followed up asking him. You know, I said, listen, is this team – he had mentioned earlier about the Browns, you know, saying, hey, we've been criticized and we got a chip on our shoulder and all that. He's like, well, we've been criticized. We have a chip on our shoulder. And I said, the only thing I've heard you criticized for is that, you know, you're winning all these games close, right? Seven in a row by 6 points or less, by the way, part of a 10-game win streak. You know, is there a little bit of the regular season, you know, is boring, right? Like I said, and boring's probably not the right word, but just like you're going to be measured by the playoffs. And so there was a let's get through the regular season so we can get to the part that's going to measure our season. And he had a great line. He said, if the regular season's boring, that's when you get your ass kicked.
Yep.
And so
it's a t-shirt worthy phrase.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought it was great. I'm like, okay, all right. I still think that maybe the regular season was boring for him. I mean, I get his point. Yeah. You can't verbalize it, but I still think that might have been it.
And by the way, we'll hear that comment on the countdown to kickoff on Sunday. So be listening around in the 1 o'clock hour.
Yeah, it's about a two-minute cut, so it's a little long for what we're doing here. But you'll hear that coming up, coming up on Sunday. A couple other NFL nuggets before we break and get to Kevin Harlan. The Bucs are going to start Leonard Fournette. Ronald Jones expected to be a game-time decision. And the Falcons making it official. Arthur Smith will become their next head coach, the offensive coordinator with the Tennessee Titans. We will take a break, come back. The great Kevin Harlan is next.
Bye.
The program with Soren Petro.
You might want to hold off on that just for a minute. Just hold on. We can't hear. All right.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Kevin Harlan on the program is presented by Buck Roofing. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. 913-384-2680 or rbuckroofing.com. And by Metcalf CarStar. If you get in a fender bender, call the experts in collision repair. Metcalf CarStar in Overland Park. Go to carstar.com and search Metcalf CarStar. Metcalf CarStar. Relax, we'll take it from here.
He calls the NBA.
Game! Series! Toronto is won!
The NFL.
He digs, he turns, he dives! It is a touchdown!
March Madness.
There's a new member of the Final Four Club, and they hail from Lubbock, Texas.
And even this.
He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. The guy is drunk.
How many jobs Kevin got?
Somebody stop that
man.
Yeah,
here comes the blue coat.
Oh, they got him.
He's the voice of America, Kevin Harlan.
Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we finish strong here, as we love to do on a Friday. The great Kevin Harlan joins us from CBS TNT Westwood One. Mr. Harlan, sir, how are you?
Oh, it's great, huh? Playoff football back in Kansas City and a big weekend against the Browns and a lot of promise in the weeks ahead. It's a fun time to be following the NFL. And last week was a nice indication, wasn't it, with the six games, three on each day. If you love football, man, you were in heaven. And it was interesting matchups, and I think probably none more interesting than Cleveland in the way they clobbered Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm curious what your impression is, because, you know, the people from Cleveland have gotten all excited because they've got a playoff win under their belt. This is now a championship caliber team in their mind. I don't think so. I think the fact that they're negative 11 points on the year, the fact that they lost to the Jets, I know with COVID depleted receiving core, but I don't care. I think the Chiefs could beat the Jets with no receivers. Losing to the Jets just a few weeks ago is not a good sign. And I know they can run the ball. I know the Chiefs run defense isn't, you know, tops in the league, but I think that's a very overrated statistic in the sport. You're going to have to throw the ball. The Chiefs will get you into a third and long at some point. You're going to have to throw. And they're a great pass defense. I think Baker Mayfield's developing, but not the top shelf guy. Vegas put the spread at 10 points for a reason. And I don't even think we're going to be considering the point spread at the end of the game, because I think the Chiefs are going to win this game big. Am I missing something here in this equation?
Well, I don't know if they'll win big, and I'm doing the game, so I really can't comment in terms of what you're talking about. But I just saw Cleveland last week. I did two games, and I saw the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game, and that was stunning. Although Pittsburgh we knew they were in disarray in December and had lost 4 or 5 going into the playoffs, and it showed in that last game. They were all over the place. I don't think that's a good indicator, but it was the first time a lot of those guys have been in the playoffs for Cleveland, playing a rival, a place they hadn't won in, you know, multiple years. So there is something to be said about that, and the fact that they came out so strong. Now, listen, I don't think they feel any pressure coming to Kansas City. I think they feel very loose, and like, hey, we weren't supposed to be here. Here we are. We're getting healthy guys back. We've been dealing with COVID over the last 6 to 7 weeks. And, you know, we've got kind of like nothing to lose. Like, even if we do, we've probably exceeded a lot. We've won a playoff game. We've made it to the divisional round. So I kind of think they're going to come in with, like, not an ounce of pressure on them. And, by the way, you know, they lost to the Jets. Trent and I did that game. But the previous week, the Jets went to L.A. and beat the Rams.
Right.
And the Rams just beat Seattle. So that shows you how weird this league is. And how even a loss, you know, by a team, you know, you just kind of, I don't know. I think the league is so close in so many ways. When we start trying to connect dots, I get it because it begins your search in how we all try to frame this game. But I think we frame it more like Chiefs arrested. We know they've not hit their ceiling. In fact, it may be a limitless ceiling for them. So that always is in play. This is what they've been aiming for all season long. The whole year has been geared toward rest, health, COVID protocol, and getting to this stage. And now they finally arrived. Cleveland has been trying to deal with the new head coach, getting out of a 6-10 season last year, finding their way, which they have, and probably surprising people, number one, with their ending record, number two, with their, you know, significant win last week. And here they are, number three, an underdog, but I don't think they really care. I just kind of think they come in loose, and we'll get a nice, I think, a pretty competitive game. I think at least for three quarters, this game will be close. I really do. 10 points seems a lot. Could be 10 points late in the fourth. I think for the first three quarters, it'll be close.
Interesting. We're talking to Kevin Harlan here in the program. A couple of things there. I do believe that the Chiefs, you know, in their seven games that they won, it's the last seven of 10, of a 10-game winning streak, the last seven were by 6 points or less, and that's getting a lot of run, and I'm fine with that. I think it deserves, you know, a commentary on it. I do think good teams find a way to win close games, and a lot of those games were, oh, by the way, scores that made them look closer than they are. But it's a relative point. I'm fine with it, because if I'm going to ding the Browns for losing to the Jets, if the Browns were to ding the Chiefs for not winning by enough, I do understand that. I absolutely feel like somewhere around midseason, the Chiefs are like, let's get to the playoffs. Come on. And I think you can look at that streak and say that Andy Reid as a coach, as far as what he wanted to show, But the players, as far as how much energy you have to give, I do think it's tough. It's my first time covering a defending Super Bowl champion. I think it's looked different. I think they have gotten other teams' best shot. And I think when they're fully engaged, they match it. And so I think it's entirely possible that they go on a run, just blitz everybody in this postseason. And we go from a conversation of how they're winning close games or not putting people away to, wow, this is one of the greatest teams in NFL history, because look at how they just blew up the whole playoffs. I can see that narrative as well. And so I think we're going to see more out of the Chiefs. I'm banking on that when I make my prediction. But a great football philosopher once told me, all right, you take any playoff game and you line up the two quarterbacks, and whoever's got the better passer rating is probably going to win. That is the great NFL philosopher known as Kevin Harlan, who told me that many years ago. And since, it is literally, I have watched it. I watched it that year, and I've watched it every year. It is one of the foundations of how I analyze playoff football, because you prove to be so accurate. And I know that comes from all your years of study and analysis. I mean, a lot of this just does come down. Not that Baker Mayfield can't have a day and get the win, but the quarterback's better with the Chiefs. I mean, do you still believe what you told me so many years ago?
I do. I think that analytics has even expanded from our conversation. We're going back many years about, because passer rating was like kind of one of the first like analytical type of
right
stats that we were kind of trying to come to grips with, and then that has spawned all the stuff that we see. And you can look at the analytics all day, and they are interesting. You and I love pro football. We love football overall, but we love pro football. And the analytics, a lot of time, will give us a roadmap and how we come to our conclusions or thoughts and how you conduct your show. I think that, listen, there's no doubt that Mahomes and the Chiefs are a special team. They are not your typical team. They are a special team, not just a defending champion, but what they did last year, what they've done this year, how they conduct business is kind of outside your traditional thinking. And I think that Vegas is still trying to figure it out, to be quite honest. I think analytics will sometimes be oblong instead of round. Like sometimes you'll stretch one number a little bit too far because it's such an outlier. When you look at the landscape of analytics and what the norm would tell you, I feel the Chiefs are the team to beat, and I think they are number one. And I do think Green Bay has closed that gap. I'm looking at all teams. The Green Bay has closed that gap a little because the Packers are truly playing up until the end of the regular season. Probably the best of any team in pro football because their quarterback has played the best of any quarterback in pro football. And clearly teams are dictated by quarterback play. Thus, you come into these matchups where if you're going to simplify it, and you and I sometimes like to do that, you look at quarterback rating, and that would be a good way to start analyzing these games and probably a good way to look at this weekend's games. Now, I say that knowing that Baker Mayfield, late in the season, took a Browns team to Nashville and completely destroyed the Titans in the first half in that game. Was it like 38-7? Some like ridiculous number against the Titans in Nashville. And then they went to Pittsburgh last week and they completely destroyed the Pittsburgh Steelers 28-0 in the first quarter and basically put it on cruise from that point on. And this is without their best offensive lineman and their best defensive back because of COVID and other. So I don't know how to tell you to look at this one. And I would say, let's begin there, Saran, and let's talk from that point on. But these playoff games are just kind of weird. And I think it really gets weird this weekend. Like, I don't know how to even gauge Brady and Breeze because I think the Tampa team that plays in New Orleans is different than the Buccaneer team the Saints saw twice and beat handily in the regular season. And I don't know. I think it's going to be an ugly game between Baltimore and the Bills because I think that's kind of how Baltimore wants to play right now. They want to muck it up and play ugly and linger and then accelerate and then linger some more and then hope their quarterback busts one free and maybe win by three. And so, I mean, like these games are just – they're hard. I would never want to bet. I'm telling you, I wouldn't want to jump in that pool for anything in the world. But – going back to your original point, to what you said, I do begin with passer rating and let that kind of guide me. And clearly Mahomes and Rodgers are two of those special guys. But Mayfield should not be ignored, even though he may have kind of an erratic rating. He is one of those guys who plays more like he did at Oklahoma and always found a way than he did his first couple years with the Browns. He's playing more like he did in college this year than he did in the previous 2 years. And I think his head coach Stefanski has opened that door and said, let's go back to what you do. And what you do is kind of improvise when you need to. You can play the formal game when you need to in the pocket. And I think he likes that. I think he likes that message and has thrived on that message and can be a chameleon. I think he can adjust to whatever kind of game he's got to play that particular Sunday.
I made the statement that Stefanski has done a great job of Alex Smithing Baker Mayfield, right? Or Mayfield, yep, or in combination, has looked at it. Because I think there was a point in Alex Smith's career where he said, okay, maybe I'm not going to set records. I'm sure every quarterback comes into the league going, I want to throw for 100,000 yards, win 12 Super Bowls, throw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns every year. And you get in, you're like, oh my God, this is hard. These guys are really good. And then you go, okay, how can I be the best me? I think all of us, you find a point in your career where you go, okay, this is what I do, and I got to be the best at this part of it. I think definitely in sports, there's that moment. And I think either on his own or with Stefanski, he's realized, okay, you know what, 5,050, that Mahomes guy, there's a reason why he pushed me out of Texas Tech. He's better. But I can still win games, right? And I can still be very effective. And I think Alex Smith went through that transition when Jim Harbaugh got there. He helped him find, like, listen, I use the term game manager, and I hate that quarterbacks don't like that. I think every great quarterback is a game manager, right? Now, maybe they have a great arm, distance, touch. They do things that, you know, the game, just a pure game manager can't do. But Patrick Mahomes manages the game just like Alex Smith. He then just does more things. You have to be able to manage the game. Like a guy who doesn't manage the game, who can beat anybody but also get beat by anybody, is Fitzpatrick, right? I think he could use a little more game manager in him. Now, some of that, you know, swashbuckler, shoot it out mentality is why he will rise up and beat some people and beat a team that you don't think he should be able to beat. Right, but it also will get him beat with five interceptions against a team that he should handle easily because he's trying to make too many plays. Baker Mayfield seems to have settled in and embraced his inner Alex Smith, and so you know I think that's a great, you know, way to win 10 games is to manage the game. And I think it's something you got to have, and it'll do you a great job in the regular season. But postseason, you got to go make exceptional plays because you're up against really good teams. And that's where I think your theory on the quarterback, it's the exceptional quarterbacks that can make those plays. And the question is, does Baker Mayfield have a day, and can he have a day on this Sunday where he plays at that level? Do you think he's got that exceptional level of play?
Well, you and I think alike in so many ways, and I agree with you on the game management and that whole philosophy. I think he is that quarterback who is capable of playing in that world. I'd like to extend that thought, though, to this. When Patrick Mahomes came out of Texas Tech, you know, there was a thought for a lot of teams that he was too erratic, right? We know that. And there's a reason why 9 teams passed on him. And they had other needs, and maybe they didn't see what Reed and everybody at Arrowhead saw. But certainly, you know, you don't pass on a guy like that. And I think that the one thing, Saran, that really stands out about both Mayfield and Patrick, and I'll extend this to Rodgers, is that this year – they have gotten exceptional quarterback coaching. Now, whether that is a testament to what was not uncovered where they were or how these coaches have extended them, like with Rodgers and Matt LaFleur up in Green Bay, like Rodgers has never played, I don't think, better quarterback than he is now, because that is it's a quarterback-friendly offense with a coach who is really dialed in to what his quarterback can and can't do, especially at Rodgers' age. What is he, 37, 38? Mayfield has got the right voices in his head. Alex Van Pelt, the coordinator, who was calling the plays last week, and Kevin Stefanski, an offensive-minded coach. And I don't think we can ever discredit, and I know here in Kansas City we have great appreciation for it, but listen, Andy Reid has taken that quarterback, with the help of Alex Smith the first year that Mahomes was out of school, and it was a rookie and was listening and watching and learning. But Andy Reid has done something just remarkable with that kid. I have more respect than ever before for these offensive coaches. I think we saw it with Walsh, and we saw it with all these kind of innovative coaches over the years and what they've done. But this year, for whatever reason, I've just been struck by when you have the right quarterback voice in your head, from these coaches to these guys, and Mayfield is a great case in point, and Patrick has been the great case in point over the last couple of years, and Rodgers over the last two, but especially this year with the second-year head coach and Matt LaFleur. They have taken to the coaching, and they have had offenses form more to what they do best. And whether that's part of this managing a game thing that you're talking about, which I do believe it is, how you construct the game plan, how you manage the way that quarterback is going to operate within this offense. I give so much credit to Stefanski, LaFleur, and Andy Reid for how they have formed and cultivated offenses that really almost fit to a T what their quarterbacks can do. Mayfield is different than Mahomes. Rodgers is different from Mahomes. Mahomes is different from those two. But the same thing is true kind of for Josh Allen in Buffalo. They have figured out a way to conform what they do with Allen's natural progression as a third-year quarterback into making what we've seen a kind of an MVP-caliber season for the Buffalo quarterback and Allen. So I think coaching quarterbacks this year has been almost on a pedestal, almost has been put right in front of us as saying, yes, coaching does matter. And those are four great examples, with management of the game as a part of all of what those guys do, managing their skill set to a T. Some guys don't do it. They say, this quarterback is going to be put in our offense. He'll have to conform. That's not what's happened in those four cases. And in Baltimore, it is an ongoing process. They are still trying to figure out what Lamar Jackson does well, how he's going to develop. They want him to be a pocket guy. He'd prefer to be a pocket guy, but because he's got these God-given talents of running the ball and being so spectacular with his legs, it's hard to deny that that's got to be a part of it. And I think that is a work in progress. But you can see already with an MVP last year, a 14-win season, and a big win on the road that they've just accomplished in Nashville and now go to Buffalo, that is trending certainly in the right direction. But to me, as a guy that follows the league, those examples have been so fascinating. Like, I don't think Goff is half the quarterback he is unless Sean McVay, you know, works with him the way he has and has made him the quarterback that he is. I don't know that Goff is a great talent, but in that offense, it takes every ounce of what he does well and just puts it right there for all of us to see, and that's how they accentuate what they do on offense.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan, best in the business when it comes to calling the game. And, of course, like I said, football philosopher Kevin Harlan from CBS, TNT, Westwood One. No, I love it. I love it. It's great stuff. It's great stuff. I put it in my book of Harlan, proclamations. So I understand the game better. Our final four.
2.5 pages. Okay, I love the final four. I love it. Who's the final four brought to us by today?
Brought to us by the University of Kansas Health System, Kevin. Thank you for asking.
Good.
You know, have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, Kevin, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Here we go. I will start you with this. Urban Meyer will or will not succeed at Jacksonville?
There is a great thought about, you know, what he does with quarterbacks, what he can do with offenses. I think what they've hired in Jacksonville is a, you know, we talk about game manager with quarterbacks. I think they've hired like a great CEO. And I think they're going to compile a staff. And if they get Trevor Lawrence, which obviously everything points to that now they've got a coach who's sensitive to quarterbacking, and he's done a good job with it, as we've seen wherever he's been. But he's more of a CEO, and he's a commanding presence, and he comes in with a resume that all those kids are going to know about, and he's going to have a very good knowledge of what's out there in the college game, the latest trends.
Sure.
I like that hire. I think, why not? I think, you know, you could go and get a retread in the NFL, or you get a guy who brings kind of a fresh new approach, and I think that's what Meyer will do, and I think they'll be a success.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we've seen, I've heard a lot of people go, ooh, I don't think it's going to work. I do, because none of his quarterbacks at Ohio State have gone on to be great pros, but he made them look like they were going to be great pros at Ohio State. Now give him a great quarterback, you know, prospect and Trevor Lawrence, and let him go to work and make him look even better. I think it is going to be a success down in Jacksonville. All right, of the coaches that are left, of the eight coaches that are left, I assume at some point you've probably had a chance to have the pregame interview, the great access that you get being the play-by-play guy for CBS and Westwood One. Which one of the coaches that are left is the best conversation in those interviews for you?
I would say Saran. I probably enjoy Andy as much as him. Now, he's a family friend going back to Green Bay, and he and his wife know my mom and dad, so I've gotten to know him over the years, whether it was in Philadelphia or certainly here in Kansas City. And he's just always, to me, you know, personally been a warm guy to talk to and more of a friend. I hate to say it. I don't want to make it look like I couldn't be critical of anything he does from a reporter standpoint, but I've got a soft spot in my heart for him and his family. And so I would say that just because I'm here and we live in Kansas City, that probably Andy, I think, is about as good a conversationalist. Although saying that, it's funny how many of these coaches watch the NBA, because we'll get on these Zoom calls And one of the things that, why aren't you doing an NBA game? What do you think of the Harden trade? You know, it's all this fun stuff, which I do enjoy. So they got lives outside football, but I'll put Andy probably at the top of the list. Nothing against the other seven, but I really like Andy so much.
All right, when it's all said and done, Josh Allen or Justin Herbert, who will have the better career?
I'm going to go with Allen. I've just been around him a little bit more. Herbert, I think, has just shocked people with what he's done. They wouldn't have passed on him the way they did, and he wouldn't have been taken as late in the first round, number six, as he was. But Allen, to me, is like a genuine guy. Small town, has embraced Buffalo and vice versa. He has been a diligent worker. He's a willing learner. And I think that he has got some things that are very special that he was born with. Size, arm, a lot of guys are smaller or weaker or weirder or whatever, but he is, physically, he checks every box, but it was always we've seen a lot of the Jamarcus Russells. We've seen all these quarterbacks that check every box physically, but what about mentally? What about the way they approach life? And I've just read enough, heard enough, and seen enough of Josh Allen. Nothing against Herbert, I've just seen more of Allen. That I just think that right now, if I had to lean one way, I'd go toward him. He's really a terrific kid. We just did their Buffalo game a couple weeks ago against Miami, and was just really impressed with him as a person and how he approaches the game. So I like Allen.
All right, and finally, one quarterback that's playing today that you think would make a great color analyst.
Well, I think they all probably would in some form or fashion.
Sure.
I think Mayfield would be really interesting because I think he just shoots from the hip and lets it go. He's a lot like Favre that way. If he would ever choose, and of course, no one knows how much of a simpleton you need to be in this business like you and I. Rodgers would be phenomenal because he's great with words. He can get a quick sentence and a quick thought out and make it make sense. And I think make the game easier for all of us to understand. But he's got such big things on his horizon and whatever life choice he makes when he's finished on the football field. But Rodgers would be, I think, absolutely unbelievable. I think he's got enough personality. He looks the part. He's going to have the resume, certainly, the name recognition. I think he could explain the game well, see things that we never see. He's so smart. His IQ is off the charts. Rodgers would be great. Nothing against anybody else. I think Mayfield for fun and grins and just I can't believe he just said that. And Rodgers would be off the charts in terms of just teaching the game and explaining the game.
Kevin Harlan is Aaron Rodgers plus Baker Mayfield. He's the fun and grins with off the chart analysis.
Called us a couple simpletons. Didn't you hear that comment?
I did, and I resemble that remark. So I say nothing.
Looking right back in the mirror at me, man.
Kevin, you're the best. I know you're busy. We'll let you go, buddy, and have a great call of the game this weekend.
Thank you, Saran. Look forward to next Friday. Take care.
The program with Saran Petro.
He is the spam eating champion of the world. Six cans of spam straight from the can.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the good sense into the hour answer. What team holds the record for margin of victory in the divisional playoffs? It is the Jaguars. Their 62-7 win over Miami in 1999. The glory would be short-lived. They lost at home to the Titans in the AFC Championship game a week later.
It's why I think, well, when there's a similar stat about dropping 40 in the wild card is they've won the Colts mm-hmm. in 2003, beat the Chiefs after dropping 40 in the first round, but it's usually not a good sign to do it. Yeah, good sense what we were playing for. GoodSenseSubs.com. Get the app. That's the easiest way. It's a great KC company, founded in Lenexa. Check them out. I found this stat. I thought this was easy. Sorry, I was sneezing while Curtis was actually reading that. I found this stat. I like this. This is from CBS. If you see your favorite team line up for a field goal of 50 yards or more in the divisional round, you better cross your fingers and pray. The ball is going to need all the help it can get to go through the uprights. Kickers have been an absolute disaster from long range in the divisional round of the playoffs over the last 10 years, hitting just 40% of their kicks. 40%.
What?
In 18 and 19, kickers combined to go 0 for 4, which meant this is from beyond 50 yards, by the way. 0 for 4, which meant there hasn't been a field goal of more than 50 yards in the divisional round since 2017. Take this information, Andy Reid, and go for it on fourth down. Don't take the 52-yarder. Don't take the 55-yarder. Clearly, cold weather, right, tight muscles, whatever it is, get closer. 50-plus yard field goals are trash. Trash in the divisional round.
Jed Marshall. Curtis Seabolt.
You ever heard of that one, Stan?
Soren Petro.
Seriously, I'm 36 years old, a fat idiot stuffing my face with Italian food here.